We are now talking, and it is 10:47, April 26. We're in Bushwick, Brooklyn, New York, Earth, physical dimension, and I'm with Tarika.
Yes.
And I'm Yasos.
Hi.
Tarika, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. Well, we can just keep talking.
Yes.
So I'm curious about your daily practice.
Practice.
Meditation.
Oh, well, I do TM, Transcendental Meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned earlier, I make a strong cup of Yuben instant freeze-dried coffee, and I have it next to me, and I put on my earplugs, do my meditation. And then when meditation's finished, without opening my eyes, I reach over to the coffee, I drink it, and that catapults me like a multi-stage rocket, stage two. And bam, from that exalted state, from both the meditation and the coffee, then I visualize how I want my life to be that day. Then I come out and blam, I do whatever I want to do.
So you visualize just for that day?
Not always, but that's the most important part of the visualization. Mm. I also visualize in general.
Yeah.
What I want happening in my life, but more specifically that day.
Mm. And do you sound when you're visualizing? Like, what do you listen to when you're doing your meditation?
Nothing. I put on earplugs.
Oh. You don't listen to anything.
No. To me, the whole point of meditation is going within, which means blocking out, ignoring all external stimuli.
Okay.
I try to minimize external stimuli. I don't need music to get calm. I'm already calm when I choose to be.
That's interesting.
So I try to block out all external stimuli. I close my eyes and I put on earplugs. That gives you an idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting too, just like as a sound maker. It's like sound needs empty space to resonate. And so
well,
you
like
want to make your body like an empty space for that to like...
Yeah, show. Paintings, you can have images emerge from blackness.
Right.
Light emerging from black. Likewise, music emerges from silence, which is why if you go to an opera or a classical orchestra, before they begin, there's total silence.
Yeah.
So that the music can emerge from that.
Right. Yeah, it seems like that role of silence is really important.
Yeah, so sound is important to me, but I don't use it when I meditate. Meditation is to block out all external stimuli and just listen within.
So would you call that listening within silence? Or is
it? It's sensory silence, but it's very active on a mental level.
Yeah. I'm curious more about that too, just like this sort of like idea of sound and silence as these like mediums for channeling, and sound as a medium for channeling. If you could talk a little bit about that.
Well, silence is the absence of sound. They're related. One is the opposite of the other. Just like blackness is the absence of light.
Silence is like a channeler of sound. It can be.
I don't understand it that way, but if you say so, fine.
How do you understand it?
I just told you, silence is the absence of sound.
And sound as like a channeler of other beings.
Yes.
Why do you think that sound is a medium for that? Or do you think sound is even a medium for that?
Sound is a medium for many things. Sound is a medium for emotions. Sound is a medium for consciousness transfer. Sound is a medium for particular vibrations to transfer. Just like people that are really sensitive, they can pick up a rock and sense where that rock has been. Say, oh, this rock is from the pyramid. Likewise, some people can listen to sound. I can listen to a person's voice and tell their emotional state right away. Not just if they're sleepy or tired or exhausted. But all kinds of things about their personality. A person's voice has embedded within it their emotional state and their spiritual state. And if you're really good at reading it, you can tell a lot about the person. I know a woman on the West Coast, and the tone of her voice, I could tell she's got the most soft heart anybody could ever have, and it's conveyed by the tone of her voice. So there's a lot of different information that's conveyed with sound.
Hmm. What do you think about ambient sound, like sound in a room? And like, I think about, there's just so many layers of like electrical hums and stuff going on, even like right now.
Yes.
And it's not necessarily sound that we're listening to. It's not an active some, but it is still chilling.
Yeah, your subconscious is processing it all. For movies, when they do soundtracks for movies, they might have the dialogue recorded in an echo chamber, a totally silent room.
Right.
But they have to add to that ambient sounds, like from different rooms, to make it real. Otherwise, it totally doesn't sound real. So they go to actual rooms where no one's making any sound, and they record the background noise just so they can bed it in so it'll sound real.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it doesn't sound real to really have silence behind the talking.
No, because real silence is so hard to find it. I mean, you have to create it
practically,
artificially.
Yeah, practically impossible. So they have to reproduce that.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing about sound technology is computers have gotten fast enough now where they can do convolution reverb in real time. Before, it took a lot of computation. You couldn't do it in real time, so you couldn't have it happening while you're creating sound and hearing the convolution reverb of it right away. And convolution reverb is very fascinating. Let me give you an example. Let's say I go to someplace unique, like a cave or a pyramid or the Taj Mahal, and if I record a sudden pop sound with it, let's say bursting a balloon,
mm-hmm.
or shooting a shot, a pistol, any sudden sound like that, or hitting a snare drum, if you record that, that sound has embedded within all the acoustics of that space.
Mm.
Well, then here's the interesting thing. Let's say I record you talking in a room with no other sounds, just you're talking, just dry, no reverb, nothing, just you're talking. So I have a recording of someone popping a balloon in the pyramid, and I have a recording of your voice. If I use convolution reverb, which multiplies these together, what you end up is, it sounds like you're talking in the pyramid.
Okay.
That's pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
Or if I record that pop sound in a cave, then I convolute that with the recording of your voice, it'll sound like you're talking in a cave. Not, I mean sort of like it, I mean exactly like it.
It's like putting a green screen in front of someone.
You
and
got
then,
it.
All of a sudden, we're not in this room.
Excellent
we're surfing
metaphor.
On a wave
Excellent
or something
metaphor.
In Hawaii.
So that's wonderful that computers have gotten fast enough that they can do convolution reverb in real time. So there's software now for reverbs where they've recorded these pop sounds in all kinds of different spaces, all kinds of amphitheaters, recording studios, concert halls. Vienna Symphony Concert Hall, the Opera Hall in Sydney, Australia, stuff like that. And so you can pick what space you want your sound to be in. You could be playing cello and convolute it with the Sydney Opera House, and it'll sound like you're playing cello in the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah,
that's pretty outrageous. That's convolution reverb.
That is crazy. And that's interesting to think about how, you record... say a symphony in the Sydney Opera House, and it's it doesn't just have the memory of that performance, but it's also the architecture of that space and how the sound
acoustics of that space. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if the inverse is true too, if these spaces have these memories of the sounds that have been happening through them. I was thinking about this yesterday a little bit.
They do have it, but it's not easy to access. It's like the Akashic Records. Every space has embedded with it everything that's ever happened there. Everything that's ever happened there. All the murders, all the people being sad, all the people talking about miscellaneous trivia. Everything is embedded there, if you can access it.
How do you access it?
Well, I haven't achieved it. When I do, I'll tell you. But I know that it's there, and there are more evolved people than me can access it.
Yeah, because when we were talking about sound healing and how it was all related to our corporeal structures and the idea of there being multiple bodies kind of telescoped into one body, light body and astral body and physical body,
etheric body, emotional body, mental body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And thinking about how that could be extended to structures that we create too. And do you feel buildings have light bodies and astral bodies, that these different memories are stored and that different traumas can be stored? And
I don't think they have multiple bodies. They're physical, they're not biological living things in the same sense as humans are.
Mm-hmm.
However, they do have stored in them everything that's ever happened there.
So could you ostensibly do sound healing on a building or on a city? Cities that have been bombed. I think about this when I go through.
Yes, you could. You could.
Yeah, war-torn cities or something.
Yeah, for example, when I was in Honolulu, I went through one area where there are no palm trees growing. It seems so strange because the rest of Honolulu had a lot of palm trees. So I said, what is it with this space? Well, this is where the bombing happened at Pearl Harbor, they said. And even now, many years later, it's still such a dark energy there that palm trees won't even grow there.
Wow.
So it does have embedded within it, and yes, you can heal it, and all the love you put there helps heal it. Also, you can heal it remotely. You can pick a spot on the planet, Uganda, anywhere, that you want to say, I'm going to take responsibility for helping heal this place, and you can just intend to send healing energy and or loving energy, for instance, same thing, there, and it'll help heal it there. So they don't have multiple bodies like a light body like humans do, but they still have stored within them everything that's happened there, and you can still heal them of that energy. But you're not just healing the building, you're hearing the etheric level of reality that is occurring in that space.
Right.
This is video?
Yeah, and I mean, even, I wonder about like the architecture of, I could say like sacred space. Like how is that architecture sort of determined in terms of like its sonic resonance? Because I feel like there's,
well, the two separate subjects there. One is sacred space.
Uh-huh.
The other is the sound, the acoustics.
Mm.
Two different topics. Which one do you want to talk about first?
How they're both interrelated.
That's an interesting question. well, sacred space has to do with sacred geometry. Sacred geometry is based on certain mathematical ratios, which people have noticed God is fond of certain ratios. And if you use those same ratios, for example, the gold mean ratio, which is the ratio, is if you have a particular length, let's say it's this long, there's a certain point along that length where the ratio of the smaller part to the bigger part is the same as the ratio of the bigger part to the whole thing.
Hmm.
And there's only one point on that line that'll have that ratio. At this point, small to big is the same ratio as big to both. And that's a very sacred ratio. And God uses that a lot in a lot of universal structures or microscopic structures. And great architects, Michelangelo, used that a lot too. Leonardo da Vinci used it a lot in proportions where he'd build a face or a body, you know, paint it. And so that's sacred geometry. It's sacred because you're using formulas that God uses a lot in the way God structures the universe. So that's sacred geometry. Now, acoustics. People that understand acoustics know how sound travels, how sound bounces off things, how long it takes it to get back, etc. You can have sounds reinforcing each other or not reinforcing each other. And the more you understand that, the better you can design acoustic spaces that will be really clear. So, if, for example, certain Greek amphitheaters, a person standing in the center, everyone can hear him because the way the sound bounces off and comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can be talking with not even loud, but if you're in the center of the vortex spot on the stage, everyone in a huge amphitheater can hear you without you having to scream. And there's also picking out certain frequencies that emphasize the space, because each space has a certain spatial distance between the walls, and each sound frequency has a certain wavelength depending on the frequency. The higher the frequency, the shorter the wavelength. The lower the frequency, the bigger the wavelength. Certain wavelengths will be multiples of the distance between the walls, so they'll get reinforced. When they bounce back, it'll reinforce the next one rather than canceling each other out. They get reinforced because it exactly matches, if it's exactly three times, three wavelengths equal the distance between the walls, it'll get reinforced if you make a sound. And because of that, you can do different notes. Let's say you're singing in a shower, and there'll be one note that resonates the room much more than the other notes. That's because that's a frequency where the wavelength, multiples of the wavelength, match the distance between the walls, so it gets reinforced, creating a standing wave. Once I was leading a group doing chanting in the King's Chamber of the Pyramid, and I said, let's pick the resonant frequency of this chamber to do our chanting, and it'll be more powerful. So I did. I said, first let me do a frequency sweep with my voice to figure out what the resonant frequency is. So I went, oh, like that. And when I hit a particular note, everyone heard it. It was much louder. So that's it. So then we all did our chanting all on the frequency of because that's the frequency that made the whole room vibrate. And it did that because the wavelength of that frequency, multiples of that, matched the distance between the walls, so it really reinforced itself. creating a standing wave, which makes a much more powerful resonance.
Yeah, it's so confusing with resonance too, because I feel like sometimes it can be like really creative and like you know, reinforce like feelings of just like strength and power, and other times it can be really destructive and like, you know, like the opera singer like hits the note that's like the resonant frequency of the glass and like it shatters.
Yeah, like in the walls of Jericho, they use the resonance from a whole bunch of trumpets to blast down a wall.
Wow.
That's resonance. The basic principle is, if you know its exact frequency and play that frequency really loud, you're giving it energy. Resonance gives it energy. You give it enough energy and can't contain the energy, so it gets destroyed. That's how the Reich machine works. It's a great healing device. The Reich machine is, he knows different frequencies kill different germs because it energizes them, and it energizes them so much they can't contain the energy, they explode.
Wow.
For example, one germ might have a resonant frequency of 236,000 times a second. So if they pass electrical energy vibrating at 236,000 times a second, all the other germs floating in the medium, they keep living like nothing happened. But that particular germ starts getting energized by it, energized, more energized, so boom, it physically explodes. It can't contain that much energy. Same principle with an opera singer. So it can be used to destroy things, or it can be used to energize things. A lot of it has to do with how much you can energize it. A certain amount might be good, more than that might give it more energy than it can contain.
You're too much.
So it explodes, can't contain that much energy. Yeah.
Yeah, I was curious about this because there was this moment last night when you were playing, I guess it was like the part of the sound healing where it was about trauma. And there's these like really low,
yes,
bassy sounds. Mm-hmm. Was it like a gong or something?
No.
I'm not sure what it was, but it was kind of percussive.
Yes.
And it had...
What it was sounds like a bass drum knocked down an octave lower, like playing at half speed.
Yeah.
To give an analogy, it wasn't actually done that way, but it's sort of like a drum sound, an octave lower, a deep drum sound. Let's knock it an octave lower.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that.
What it like... kind of conjured in my head was like sounds of war.
Mm-hmm.
It had this element of like cannons on a battlefield, but like underwater, because it was that kind of like muted, like slowed down element. But it got me thinking about, because you had introduced it as something that activates trauma, I was thinking about
something that helps release trauma.
Release trauma. Well, yeah, exactly.
Not activate trauma.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know, people with post-traumatic stress and like dealing with being in war and like listening to these sounds that are sort of in these like small doses, sounds of that are like echoes of destruction.
If a person were experiencing trauma from war, that's not one of the sounds I would choose to use for them.
Yeah.
Because it's too similar to what you're talking about.
Okay.
I would use different kinds of sounds for people who are traumatized specifically from war.
I guess what I'm curious about is, if there...
Do you know what they used that was really effective for war trauma?
What's that?
Crystal vision. Crystal vision is polarized crystal slides. If you have a chemical called resorcinol, and you have slides, you know, like a slide for a slide projector, 2 inch by 2 inches, and you have a thin piece of glass, you put this white powder resorcinol crystal, then you put another piece of glass over it. So the resorcinol crystal is between glass and glass, and the glass is exactly the size of a slide projector, you know, slide.
Yeah.
And then you put that on a heating unit so the white crystal melts. When it melts, it becomes liquid. Then you squish the glass together and then take it out when it's liquid so it crystallizes. When it comes out, it's no longer liquid. It hardens. When it hardens, you have a thin layer of clear crystal. When you look at it, it's clear. You can sort of make out the crystal pattern. It's clear. But then here's the interesting thing. You know what a polarizer filter is?
No.
Well, a polarized filter looks gray when you look through it, but what it does is it doesn't allow light to travel, vibrate this way and this way, but only one particular way, not the other way, okay? Because light really goes in a spiral. It makes it only go one way.
Mm.
Okay. So when you put a polarizer filter, let's say you're looking at the glass, you put a polarized filter in front of it, it's just the same thing, a little darker. If you put it behind it, it's just the same thing, a little darker. But if you have a polarizer filter both in front of it and behind it, you get colors. Because it functions like a prism. you get to see all the colors of the rainbow in that crystal. And then if you rotate this one, the colors, color cycle, they shift. Or if you rotate that one, colors shift. So if you project this, let's say you put one of the polarizers on the glass. So the light bulb projects light, it goes through a polarizer, then the glass, then the thin crystal, then the other glass, and it comes out of the slide projector, then you have the other polarizer in front of it, and if it's on a little motorized wheel, it'll slowly start rotating, so you get color changes, and then projected on the wall, you get gorgeous rainbow colors on the wall.
Wow.
In a crystalline pattern that are continuously changing. They would use that for war trauma. And it was the most powerful thing they could find to get people out of trauma. Just look at pure rainbow colors that were changing within a crystalline pattern. Polarized crystal slides. And that was like, they had great success with that. Just have them look at beautiful, pure, and I mean really pure colors. All the colors of the rainbow right there at any given instant, but they're all shifting colors all at the same time.
It sounds beautiful.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. I used to use it when I did concerts and I had slide projectors. Now that I use video, I have video of that as one of the many, many, many things that I project, not just that, just one of thousands of different things I use.
Yeah. I mean, I guess where I was like kind of going with my question, I was like kind of curious about was just if there is such thing as sonic homeopathy, so to speak, where, you know, like with homeopathics, you like, the way you like cure a disease is to like take a little bit of this disease and then like distill it,
yeah,
and then like you kind of like inject it into the body, but you kind of trick yourself, you know. And so it's like with those sounds that you were playing last night, it was like echoes of maybe, you know, like creatively, like cannons or something on a battlefield, or like this is how my mind.
Well, that's your association,
You know, like, I'm not saying everyone felt that way, but
yeah,
you know, like, but because it was presented in this context, it was like very like nurturing. And I don't know, it kind of, like...
What an interesting concept, homeopathic healing sounds. I've never even thought of that idea before.
But almost like, almost like tapping into, like this element of dissonance or, like, destructive sound, but presenting it in this way where it's distilled and actually can be, like, turned around.
Yeah, I don't consider that a dissonant sound. A sudden bass sound is not necessarily dissonant.
Or I guess I just mean like...
Dissonant really means two or more sounds that clash with each other.
Right.
Any one sound is not going to be dissonant.
You're right. I guess what I meant is just like the connotation of like, you know, like war sounds.
Yeah, that was the association in your mind. Mm-hmm. Cannons and all that.
Or even just thinking about
bombs
like
going off in the distance.
Right? Yeah.
Deep bass sounds.
Or just thinking about like what you were saying with dissonance and how it shatters crystal structures. Like, can you talk about that?
Well, that's just an example of resonance again. If you hit the resonant frequency, each physical object has its own resonant frequency. If you vibrate it with sound on that resonant frequency, it'll energize it. And if you vibrate it even more, it'll resonate it even more, be accumulating energy, start shaking with its own energy. And if you resonate it enough, it just explodes, can't even contain that much energy.
Mm-hmm. But like, how, I don't know, I think about this just because like
Another example would be, let's say you've got a part of your body that needs healing because you have stuck energy, which means, let's say you have a repressed emotion by your liver area, that's where it's being stored, on the emotional body, which is causing an energy block in your etheric body, which is causing your liver to not get enough prana because the etheric energy is stuck, because the emotional energy is stuck. You could resonate that by making tones. You could try different tones, different frequencies, till you feel that you're really resonating it. And if you feel like it, then you are.
Hmm.
If you keep toning there, you're energizing that. And you energize it enough, boom, and it explodes. And the block goes away. It's decrystallized. It's been internally exploded. So then the emotional energy flows freely there. The etheric energy flows freely there. And then your liver's back to normal because it's getting the etheric prana it needs.
How would you say that relates to acoustic levitation?
That's a whole other topic. There are NASA patents for acoustic levitation, and they're repressed. The public does not have access to them. But as I talked in the workshop last night, the pyramids in Egypt were in many cases put in place using acoustic levitation. And the Tibetan monks would use acoustic levitation to make their monks levitate from one place to another that could be very far away, using those horns, creating a half circle. But a lot of that's hard to access that information because they don't want the public to know.
But is there a way to access it psychically?
Well, acoustic levitation means it's acoustic, it's physical airwaves, it's not just psychic, it's physical airwaves vibrating the air.
Right, but I mean, is it information that like one organization can just like hold the information, or is it something that you can't access through other means?
Well, many people could try accessing. You could do scan on the internet for acoustic levitation. I'm sure you're trying all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they try to hide it, but they can't totally hide it.
Yeah,
you'll find
totally.
Bits of information here or there, and if you were to scout it enough, you probably could gather a lot of information. Not all of it, but a lot of information. Enough to do some interesting experiments.
Mm.
But I know already that if you create half a circle of things all aimed towards the center, they could be speakers, they could be Tibetan horns, it doesn't matter what they are. And if they're all just generating the same one tone, the same one note, all aimed at the center point, that center point is going to create an interdimensional vortex with many interesting properties, including anti-gravity levitation, and also including easier access to other dimensions.
Hmm. So when you talk about different vortexes like on the surface of the Earth that are already existing, like,
yes,
like Delphi or
yes,
like the pyramids, were those, do you think that those were created by sound originally?
No, they're created by the Earth. Just like your body has acupuncture points, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, you're born with acupuncture points like that. It's part of the body pattern. Same with the Earth. It's got certain points on it where there's easier access between dimensions. Just like more recently, modern medical equipment has gotten sensitive enough to where they can measure the difference in electrical conductivity along your skin. They can put a pinpoint, a metal detector there, and move it along your skin. And when there's increased electrical conductivity, it can measure it there.
Wow.
And lo and behold, what did they discover? The points of enhanced electrical conductivity are exactly where the Chinese acupuncturist said the acupuncture points were. Exactly there. So it verified, versus the, oh, Chinese acupuncture, that's just superstition. Now they're finding out it's being verified with scientific equipment.
Aww.
Scientific equipment finally got sensitive enough to verify what the acupuncturists have known all along. So the Earth likewise has points of enhanced conductivity for consciousness and easier access to other dimensions. It's always been there as long as the Earth has been there. It had nothing to do with sound, nothing to do with humans even. It preceded humans.
Is there ways of performing like terrestrial acupuncture?
Yes, a lot of people, for example, during harmonic convergence, which happened a long time ago.
Explain that real quick.
I forgot what the year was for harmonic convergence, but it's a time when there was a lot of a quantum leap increase in consciousness for a lot of people, especially in the New Age field. And at that point in time, maybe it was like 22 years ago, I'm not sure, a lot of people were getting guidance. Go to this sacred spot and plant your crystal there. Strange enough, many different people got the same message, but to bring their crystal to a different sacred spot, meaning a vortex spot, an acupuncture point on the planet all at the same time. Well, what were they doing? They were using acupuncture for the planet. They were putting these crystals on these enhanced vortex spots with enhanced electrical etheric conductivity to, like putting a needle in an acupuncture point on your body to stimulate it, and they were stimulating it. That was doing acupuncture for the Earth.
Wow.
Even people that go to a sacred spot like the pyramids and meditate together as a group, creating a group vortex from the group meditation, that also is acupuncture for the planet.
Hmm.
You can even do it remotely. Let's say you pick a spot like Fujiyama in Japan. You could have a circle of people in Brooklyn, New York, all gather together in a circle, hold hands, close your eyes, visualize Fujiyama. When they're all synchronized to it, just project and intend to send loving energy into Fujiyama. Boom, that energizes it. That's doing acupuncture to the Earth.
Hmm. Have you ever tried it with the ozone, the hole in the ozone layer?
I've never tried it that way.
Yeah.
I've heard different reports about the increasing ozone layer. in general, it's treated as a very dangerous thing, a very bad thing. But another point of view that I heard from particular aliens that I have a lot of respect for say, you don't need to give it a negative interpretation. Think of it in terms of removing a filter to our crown chakra so our crown chakra can get more activated.
Hmm. Do you think there's chakras on the earth as well?
Different people have their own ideas for where the chakras are. So it's kind of arbitrary. Some people say, well, Hawaii is a heart chakra, you know. But different people have totally different schemes, all of which contradict each other. So there are energy spots, but which spot is which chakra is kind of arbitrary.
Yeah.
Some people say Mount Shasta is the crown chakra. Well, yeah, okay, maybe.
Do you believe in any hollow earth theories?
As a matter of fact, yes, although I suspect that it's not quite on the same dimension as this one. I think it's a slightly shifted dimension. Basically, you know the shape of an apple, and at the top and bottom, how it curves in towards the middle? Well, the Earth is actually shaped like that.
Hmm.
And the North Pole and South Pole, it actually curves in towards the center, like an apple does. And that's the most direct, easy access to the inner levels of the Earth. But as you're going into them, it's a slightly different dimension. It's close enough so you can make the transition, but it's not really the same physical dimension as here. And there are civilizations there, the Agarthans. And they're like humans, but they're bigger and they're much more spiritually evolved than we are. They're bigger. They're waiting for the unruly, spoiled brat children on Earth to wake up and catch up and start being so destructive. They're very patient.
Do you think that's going to happen anytime soon?
Yeah, I do. I think a lot of wild things are going to happen with this next 2 years. This planet will be totally, totally transformed.
A lot of people have been talking about 2012 recently, I think just because it is 2012 now, so it's convenient to talk about it, but I wonder, like, were people talking about 2012 theories in the 60s and 70s? They are now.
Well, the Mayan calendar always talked about it as being the end of one cycle and the beginning of a new cycle.
Right.
So the closer we got to 2012, the more conversation there was about it. So probably 20 years ago there wasn't too much because it's just a vague thing in that who cares about 20 years from now.
Mm.
Well, when it got closer, it got to be more relevant. And now it's really relevant because we're in that year.
But why the Mayan cycle? Why do you think that has been picked upon? I mean, there's so many different cycles presented by so many different cultures.
The Mayans had access to a lot of advanced know-how because of the ET races they were interacting with who gave them a lot of advanced know-how. They knew that in 2012, there'd be such a profound shift in consciousness for the whole planet that what happened after that year could not be easily predicted.
Hmm.
So the age of being able to predict what will happen next, no longer there. So they ended that cycle then, there for that reason. The reason it was no longer that predictable is because there's going to be a quantum leap in consciousness, which is going to begin there but take a big leap perhaps 2 years later, around 2014.
Hmm.
Big, big leap. A lot of people are ready to make the ascension, some people aren't. God loves them all. If they want to stick around to this level they're at now, you can stay there as long as you like. God's patient because God's in eternity. He doesn't care how long you want to take, knows that eventually you'll get there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to spend more time on this level, fine, we'll find a planet that's just perfect for you. You can have all the wars you want for as long as you like until you're sick and tired of it. You can be cool to other people for as long as you like until you're sick and tired of it, until you catch on that being nice to people feels better.
Yeah.
And so God loves them all, they can play whatever games they want for as long as they like. But those people that want to evolve and expand to the next level will be sticking around planet Earth for that transition. There'll be a quantum leap. It's starting now already, and it'll be happening more around December 2012, but it'll really get going in 2014. There'll be a very significant shift in consciousness. For many people, it'll be a shift from the third to the fourth dimension, which is still being physical, but it's much more unlimited consciousness type of physical.
How many, like, measured dimensions have there been counted so far?
It's arbitrary. Different people have different schemes.
Mm-hmm.
But when you really understand that God is infinite, that the universe therefore is also infinite, there's no upper limit to how many dimensions there are. No matter how high you go, there's still an infinite number of dimensions higher. It's an open game. God created to be unlimited, no upper limit. So if we're going from third to fourth, you go from the 3 millionth to the 40 millionth, and there'd still be an infinite number of dimensions higher than that. There's no upper limit.
Is there a lower limit?
Well, let's say the first dimension is rocks. Second dimension would be sort of like plant consciousness. So you can think of it in terms of rocks being one end of the spectrum, you know, minerals, consciousness being one end of the spectrum, and going up from there. Just like with emotions, it's an infinite range, but one end of the range, you can only go as slow as zero frequency, and that's it. You can't get any lower than that. Zero frequency is being frozen in fear. And you just can't get any lower emotionally than being frozen in fear. You stop breathing when you're frozen in fear. That's zero frequency. You can't get any slower than zero.
You die.
Well, you don't die, but you're temporarily shut down for while you're in that state. If you were to stay there, you'd die, but usually people don't stay in that frequency. Maybe you're frozen in fear because you think you're going to die. You see what I'm saying? So negative emotions are a limited range. It's from melancholy and sadness all the way down to things like anger, hate, jealousy, revenge, all the way down to being frozen in fear. That's a limited range. But for melancholy, as soon as you get a little bit higher than that in frequency, then you start to feel good, gladness, feeling okay. Then it goes happiness, joy, ecstasy, rapture, and it just keeps going way, way up, way, way up. And that's in infinite, unlimited range. So negative emotion is very finite, limited range. Positive emotion is infinite, open-ended range.
That's good to know.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, emotions happen in octaves. For example, you can have, you know, an octave means twice the frequency is an octave higher, or half the frequency is an octave lower. For example, if I sing a note, la, an octave higher, twice the frequency would be la. That's an octave higher. An octave higher would be la, like that. So that's an octave higher, meaning exactly twice the frequency. An octave lower means half the frequency. Well, emotions work with octaves also. So you can have the emotion of gladness, I'm glad. And if you knock that an octave higher, I'm happy. You have that an octave higher, joy. An octave higher, ecstasy. An octave higher, rapture. An octave higher, we don't have words for it because humans seldom go there. An octave higher, we really don't have words for it. And if you go about two octaves higher than that, then you're in the range where angels cruise all the time. Humans don't have words for that. So one of the functions of my music is to familiarize people through music with higher octave versions of harmonious emotions that they're already familiar with. Higher octave versions of love, higher octave versions of gratitude, higher octave versions of joy, ecstasy, rapture. So to familiarize them, and then once they get familiar with it, once they're introduced to it, they can go there without the music. The music's like temporary training wheels to introduce them to it. But once they're introduced to it, they don't need the music anymore to get there. If they forget, they can use the music to remind them. I was, oh yeah, I remember the state. Now I don't need the music to get there. I can get there without the music.
It's like a reminder of like inner music.
It's a reminder of inner emotional states. The music helps induce a particular emotional state. Once you get there, you don't need the music to get to those emotional states.
I mean, how do you start going up the octaves? Like, how, like, what would you tell someone who's just like trapped in this position of fear? Like, how do you help to elevate them to more of a position of love?
Okay. The best way to deal with fear is this. You have to understand that at any given moment, what you're feeling is a result of what you're believing. So if you're feeling something you wish you weren't feeling, like fear, for example, you ask yourself, what must I be believing right now to be feeling fear right now? So you have to backtrack. What's the belief that's causing this emotion? Once you get in touch with the belief, okay, I'm afraid because I think someone's going to knock down that door and come into the pistol and shoot me. Whatever, okay, I'm giving a crazy example. Once you get in touch with that belief, then you need to, number one, own it. Okay, I don't want to admit it, but I do admit it. That is my belief, I own it. Because you can't change it if you don't own it. You have to admit to yourself that yes, you really do have it. Being in denial, you're not going to be able to change it. You can only change what you own. So step one is get in touch with what the belief is that's causing the fear. Step two, admit it to yourself, own it. So yes, I do have this belief. I wish I didn't, but I do. And then once you realize that, well, what belief would I like to replace it with? I could believe that I live in a safe universe and no one's going to knock down that door and shoot me with a pistol. I live in a safe universe. Now, you can say you believe that, it's not going to change your feeling, but if you actually shift your beliefs, then instantly your feelings shift. Because at any given instant, your emotions are always the result of what you're believing in that instant. So the microsecond you change your belief, that same microsecond, your feelings are changing. So that's the best way to get rid of fear. Use it as a tool to help you get in touch with disempowering beliefs that don't serve you, that you can replace with beliefs that do serve you. Like, I live in a safe universe, or yes, I am loved, or whatever it would be, you know. So that's the best way to get rid of undesirable emotions.
How long does that process take to sort of get that resonance between, like, belief and feeling? I mean, I guess it's different for everyone, maybe.
That resonance is something that's always happening, always with everyone. Beliefs are the cause, feelings are the result. That's always happening, always with everyone, every second of their existence. So, what are you asking?
You think it's the beliefs the cause and
yes.
the result, not
yes.
the other way around?
No.
Hmm.
No.
Interesting.
How it actually happens is the causal chain is this. You believe something, which causes you to attract a particular experience in your reality, because beliefs are like magnets that pull in versions of reality. If you believe everyone hates me, you'll attract experiences that verify, sure enough, everybody hates me. If you believe everyone loves me, sure enough, you'll attract experiences that verify that everyone loves you. Whatever you believe, you attract experiences. So, you have a belief that causes you to attract a particular experience, then you interpret that, what you're perceiving, which again is a result of your belief, then you emotionally react to it, then you have thoughts about that, then you act. So that's the causal chain. Belief, attracting experience, perception of the experience, interpretation of that experience, feelings, emotionally reacting to it, then thoughts about it, and then action.
Hmm. What about like gut feelings?
What
like
about
before you understand like really what you're believing about a situation, you just like get this gut feeling about it.
Yeah, well, that's the result of what you're believing.
It's still related to belief.
Yeah, it's a gut feeling. It's also signals from your higher self, your guidance, telling you don't trust that. You know, you may be having your guardian angels, your higher self, telling you don't go that way. It's not a good idea. Whenever I get that, I always listen to it. I never challenge it.
Mm.
I always listen to it. I could tell you so many stories.
Please do.
Well, once I was doing a concert in Tucson, Arizona, and I was with a friend and my girlfriend, and he was showing us a beautiful part of the suburbs on the outskirts of, no, it wasn't Tucson, it was Phoenix, Arizona. And we're going up this very wealthy neighborhood, and he's showing us around. We parked the car just to walk around these streets with these very wealthy homes. And he said, let's walk up the street and I want to show you how nice it is. And I got this strong gut feeling, we shouldn't go there. He said, oh, why? He says, I'm getting guidance that we shouldn't go there, not a good idea. Suddenly a police car zoomed past us, went up that street. He said, oh, let's just go up. Well, what's the big deal? He says, well, you can go if you want, but I'm not going to go because I'm getting guidance, we should not go. I'm not going there because I trust my guidance always. I got a gut feeling, which I knew was a signal from my guardian angels or my higher self saying, don't go there. And I always stress that. I never question it. So he said, but why don't you want to go there? I don't know why. It's just a gut feeling, but I trust that. I don't have any logical reason, but I don't ever question it. So both my girlfriend and this guy that lived in Phoenix, they got disgusted with me. So they started walking up there. I wouldn't go. I was just going to say, well, then another police guy went up. They went up about half a block, and there's a bust going on. They're busting these people for illegal drugs, the police were. They walked to the police, what's going on here? We're busting these people, and you better leave too, or we'll bust you too. So they almost got involved in the bust by being there. Now, I didn't know all that, but my higher self said, don't go there, and I listened to it. I don't ever question it. So that's one example. I could give you other examples too.
When, at what point did you start discerning, like, oh, this is my higher self talking, or oh, this is my lower self talking? Like, when did that trust process start coming in? Like, learning which voice to kind of trust? Because I feel like those voices are always...
If it's coming from your mind, it's not coming from your inner guidance. If it's coming from your heart, it's coming from your inner guidance. So you need to discern, am I just thinking this, or am I feeling it in my heart?
Hmm.
If it's coming from your gut, it could be either one.
Yeah.
Because you can have negative thoughts, which make you have a gut feeling. Or you could be having guidance from your heart, gut feeling. When Joseph and Mary were in Jerusalem, they got a feeling that they should split town real fast because otherwise their son Jesus might be killed. They didn't know whether it was just their own ego, mind creating weirdness, or if it was actually a message from within. So they both meditated on it to see, okay, is this guidance from within or is it something external? They both got the same message after meditating that, no, this is for real, we're getting guidance, but we've got to split town, and they did. So Jesus wasn't killed. He survived that because his parents knew enough to split town. They got the message and they acted on it. So you can develop discernment about whether it's coming from your heart or your mind through practice. Practice makes perfect. The more you try to discern which is coming from, the better you get at it. Practice makes perfect. The more you do it, the better you get at it. So you can just stop a moment, get quiet, ask yourself, okay, is this just my mind playing games, or is this actual message coming in through my heart? And then use your discernment, act on it. Sooner or later you find out which one it was anyway, and through practice you get better at discerning which it is.
At what point did you feel like you started getting guidance?
Good question. I don't know. Maybe 1969, something like that. But whenever I'd get something like that, it'd be so loud and clear. I'll give you an extreme example.
Yeah,
okay.
Please.
Here's an extreme example. Once I was visiting my relatives in Athens, Greece, and I figured one night I'm going to go to the Plaka area, nightclub area, at night, and just enjoy it by myself, just by myself. So I went down and I sat down at one of the tavernas, and I had some Turkish coffee in Cafe Turkiko. I was just sitting enjoying nightlife, very lively. A lot of couples there just smooching, having a good time. Everything was very happy. And you can see the Parthenon lit up at night. And it's a gorgeous sight because it's on top of a hill. And they have huge floodlights on the Parthenon, but the hill is not lit up at all. So it looks like a temple floating in the sky.
Wow.
High up, yeah.
Psychedelic. Just,
yeah, totally floating in the sky. Beautiful temple floating in the sky at about this angle, you know.
Oh, wow.
Maybe 40 degrees up. Beautiful sight. So I was having a good time. Suddenly, out of nowhere, I started hearing this goddess voice in my mind talking to me, saying, go to the Parthenon now. And I could hear as loud as I'm hearing you, only it was in my mind.
Wow.
I was saying, go to the Parthenon now. And so I knew I was hearing it. I knew I wasn't hallucinating it. So I talked back telepathically where I'd like to, but I know that they lock it up at night.
Yeah.
You know? Go to the Parthenon now. Well, I want to, but it's locked up at night. There's no point. It's go to the Parthenon now. I couldn't even tell me this. I said, leave me alone. I'm not going to go there until they lock it up at night. What's the point? Said, go to the Parthenon now. It would not leave me alone. Okay, okay, I'll do it. Leave me alone, I'll do it. So I started walking up towards there, and there's a path. And basically, it was not lit up at night, but it's a curved walking path going uphill leading to the Parthenon, which I knew was fenced in and locked up at night. But I had my flute with me with a leather strap so I could have it on my shoulders, both my hands are free. And I was just walking up this path. You could see couples making out, kissing each other. And you just keep walking, there'd be other couples making out, kissing each other. You just eventually walk up there till I finally got to the top. It was dark, you couldn't see too much. But I saw a soldier open the gate, close it, and then there was a guardhouse there. And these soldiers had guns. I got closer, and there's a guardhouse there. And when I got really close and my eyes adjusted to the darkness, I could see what was going on. There are two soldiers on top of the guardhouse, just enjoying the view of Athens. They had a little transistor radio playing. They're just having a good time, listening to music, enjoying the view of Athens. They were guarding the Parthenon, you know. And they had guns, they had rifles. So I said, well, he just walked in, closed the gate. I wonder if it's locked or unlocked. Wouldn't it be true if it was unlocked? I went up to it. I said, oh my God, it's unlocked. It's closed, but it's not locked. Oh, wow, should I try? Well, what if they catch me? What if they shoot me, you know? So this voice said, go to the Parthenon now, you know? Woo! And I was hearing it in my mind, loud as I'm hearing you. Just no question about it. It's clear as day. So I figured, should I give this a chance and give it a try or what? Okay, I'll try. Because it's the inner guidance, I'm going to follow it, right?
Yeah.
So I see if I can open the door without them hearing it. It made creaking sounds. I wish it didn't make those creaking sounds, but they were playing loud Greek music, so they didn't hear it. So I opened it more. They still haven't noticed me. I opened the door more. It was, you know, like a metal gate with a metal fence. Opened it more. They haven't noticed me yet. So then I closed the gate. He says, oh my God, I'm inside. They haven't noticed me. Let me see if I can walk away from here without them noticing me. So I started walking up the path towards the Parthenon, away from them in the opposite direction. They haven't noticed me yet. I forget any second now, they're going to say, stop, who's there? You know, are there guns? So I was ready for that. And I can speak Greek too. So I was walking up. Finally, I got away. I said, oh my God, I did it. I'm away from their view. Now I can go to the Parthenon and have all to myself. Which is quite a treat, because normally when you're there with a whole bunch of tourists, you can't tune into the etheric energy of what went down there centuries ago, because, you know, there's Kodak cameras and transistor radios and everything like that, and babies crying and everything, and you don't really tune into the Parthenon. You tune into all the tourists that are there. But if I could have it all to myself, trippy. So I started walking up this path to the Parthenon. I said, wow, I'm going to have it all to myself. And just when I thought I'd gotten up there and everything's fine, suddenly, blam, all these huge bright lights around me. I said, okay, I put my hands up. Okay, you got me. And I was blinded. The lights were so thin. Okay, put my hands up. Okay, you got me. I give up. And then nobody came. Nobody was around. And I said, what is it? As it happened, I just happened to be walking in front of one of those huge multi-million watt floodlights on the Parthenon just when it turned on. I happened to walk by, and it was so bright that it blinded me. It took about 15 minutes for my eyes to adjust to get past it. So nobody caught me. I just happened to be in front of it when it turned on. So I kept walking up, and then I got to the Parthenon. I had the whole place to myself for hours. I was playing my flute there. I was tuning into it. I had past life memory being up there. I could tell you the experiences, memory I had, just because this voice inside me says, go to the Parthenon now.
What was the memory you had?
I remembered participating in art contests there. And their idea of art contest was a combination of an art contest and a talent contest and a beauty contest and a charm contest all mixed in together. One person might paint, another might dance, another might do a sculpture, another might play an instrument. But they rate you on everything. They rate you on your presence, how well you do it, how beautiful you are, how poised and stately you are, how much charm you have. All of it blended together, and they rate you how good you are. And it was like a contest, right? It's an overall vibe contest. And I played my flute differently. Normally, when I play flute now, I play like this. When I was there, I was playing like this. It made me stand really straight and tall. Not like the way normally, but totally straight spine. Totally straight spine. And play flute like this, instead of, you know, how the way I normally do it. So I felt really different. I got that the key of the music in the Parthenon, I was sitting in the key of A, and I even got a particular scale that it was in. Us having memories like that was quite an experience. So I was there for about 2.5 hours just by myself. It's really one of those treasures in my lifetime, having it all to myself.
Wow.
And then it's time to go back down. So, okay, here we go again. So I'm going down, and I'm getting close to the gate. When I got near the gate, I started to see what was going on, and when my eyes adjusted, I say, oh good, they're still on top of the guardhouse. Everything is cool. I'll just reverse what I did before, and I'll be out of here, and everything will be fine. So I snuck up towards the gate, because they had a tall fence, about maybe 2 1/3 times my height. Metal fence. I walked up the gate. I'll sneak out. They'll never know. They didn't hear me before. They won't hear me now, because the music's still playing. I start up and guess it. The gate's locked. Oh my God, the gate is locked. Now I'm locked in. What am I gonna do? I don't wanna be spending the whole night in here. What am I gonna do? The gate's locked now. I figured, well, I can actually climb over it. I'll just climb over it, that's what I'll do. And just hope they don't notice me. So I put my flute with a leather strap over my shoulder so both my hands are free. And I started climbing over this gate. And just when I was on the very top, stop, who's there?
Oh, no.
They found me. What are you doing? I'm trying to get out of here. You can't get in here. He says, trying to get in, I'm trying to get out. You're trying to get in. What are you doing? What are you trying to get in? Don't you realize it's locked up at night? He says, how am I supposed to know it's locked up at night? There's no signs here saying locked up. You can't get in here. He says, how did you get in here anyway? He says, it was unlocked. I just walked in. He says, don't you realize this is locked? How am I supposed to know? Don't you realize we can put you in jail for that? How am I supposed to realize that? Nobody said it was illegal and it was unlocked. I just walked in. And then, what were you doing up there? I was playing flute. My flute says, well, then why don't you play your flute for us? So I played my flute for them. They were happy. I was happy. Everything's great. No, that's the Greek consciousness, you know. Ignore the rules. Just follow your heart, you know. In sociology, they talk about the degree to which people bend the rules, follow their heart, or stick to the rules, don't follow their heart.
Huh.
And basically what they notice is the farther you get from the equator, the more they ignore their heart and follow the rules.
Whoa.
And the closer you get to the equator, the more they bend the rules and follow their heart. So cultures that are close to the equator, yeah, who cares about the rules? Let's just follow our heart and do that. So Greece is an example of that. I said, oh, let's just play your flute for us. So we all had a great time, and then I left. It's great. So that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't followed that guidance I was getting. And that was loud and clear. I was hearing it in my mind as easily as I hear you.
Wow.
I don't claim to be telepathic, but that whoever was doing that was transmitting it so clearly that I didn't have any problem hearing it in my mind.
Did you ever find out who was saying
no, that? No, I still don't know who it was.
Wow. Has that voice come back?
Not voice? That one. All I know is that it was some female consciousness, and it felt like a female goddess consciousness, although I have no idea who it was. Still don't know.
You're tapped into other goddess consciousnesses.
I love goddesses.
Yeah.
I love goddesses.
Tell me about that.
Oh, man. That's a...
Let's girl talk.
How much time you got? I have a 12-minute video which I could email you. Oh no, which I could mail you as a DVD sometime if you wanted. It's called What Being a Goddess Means.
I'm curious.
Okay, let me make a note here. I'll send it to you.
Was that what was playing last night?
No.
Okay. That looked cool too, that video.
Okay, so you both have to give me your addresses for me to do this. So
okay.
You give me your address first.
Yeah, sure.
Taraka.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
161.
Mm-hmm.
Madison Street. Apartment 2. Brooklyn. And then the zip is 11216.
Okay.
Well, I didn't realize it'd be an actual package.
It'll be a DVD.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
184 West Street.
Okay. First of all, what's your full name?
Camilla Padgitt.
Padgitt
hyphen Coles.
Coles.
Yeah.
Okay.
184 West Street, number 2. Brooklyn, New York, 11222. Yeah, I'm really curious about that.
11222?
Mm-hmm. The goddess idea.
Yeah, so what this talk is, it's 15 minutes long. The way it happened was kind of trippy. I and my girlfriend then were visiting a friend where a lot of trippy things happen. And this friend was named Penny. Who loves to videotape people. She's got a lot of videos, all kinds of people. And my girlfriend was gorgeous, total goddess. And Penny was so impressed by my girlfriend, says, I'd like to videotape you talking about what it means to be a goddess. So she turned on the camera. My girlfriend was a total magnificent doll. But she didn't say anything. She radiated being a goddess, but she didn't say anything. So after a few minutes, when Penny realized she's not going to say anything, she has nothing to actually say about it, she turned the camera off. And I said, well, gee, you should videotape me. I've got a lot to say on that topic. I said, okay. So then they dressed me up first. They dressed me up this really trippy outfit. It looks so wild.
You have pictures?
Yeah, you got to see it. They dressed me up. I had some kind of like a toga on like this with a bare chest underneath it. It just tripped out. then turn on the camera and I talk for about 12 minutes. I packed a lot into it. I had a lot to say in that topic. And a lot of people get a lot out of that. And this is after I had the experience of being a woman, of being a female. So I know a lot from the female point of view what it means being a goddess.
Wait, what do you mean by being a female? What was your experience being a female?
I thought I explained this at the workshop last night.
Well, other people haven't heard it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. I once was in a very exalted state, a heightened state of consciousness, and during that time I was practicing a special love meditation which I myself had developed. If I want to send love to you, I can aim my heart at you and blast like a cannon, a love cannon, love from my heart to you, right? And if I want to send love to Camilla, I can aim this love cannon from me to Camilla. But if I want to send love to myself, how do I aim it? Right?
Yeah.
So I figured, I know what. I'll create a love mirror. Put it in front of me and adjust the angle of the mirror so it bounces back to me. So I created this meditation with a love mirror where I bounce love from my heart to the mirror and that love bounces back to me. So I was doing this exercise with a love mirror and the love energy started accumulating inside me really strongly, and then pretty soon I realized as it was accumulating that it was accumulating in an X-shaped aura. I'm having trouble with that incense. It's getting too strong for me, Camilla.
Oh, the incense?
Yeah, it's getting too strong for my breathing and talking. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you, sweetie. And so the love energy was accumulating this X-shaped aura around me. It's getting thicker and thicker and thicker. I just kept sending love to this mirror, which kept bouncing back to me. The love energy kept thicker, 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 thicker. And at one point, bam! There was an ignition, and it's as if some trapdoor opened up underneath me, and a genie swirled up around my body, right up to me, and it was the female aspect of me. It's as if she came up from some trapdoor where she'd been trapped, she popped out, she circled around me like this, and you think, well, if she'd been trapped there all this time, she must be really angry at me, but it was the opposite of that. She was totally loving me. The female aspect of me was loving me so much, it was like the way every man always dreamed and hoped a woman would actually love him, just totally, totally loving me. And it was an incredible experience. Then before I knew it, I became her. I became the female aspect of me. And it was like, I can't tell you what a strange experience it was.
Please tell me.
So I stood up and I felt myself like a woman. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And the one resounding thought that kept going through my whole consciousness and being was, this is so vulnerable. This is so vulnerable. They go through a whole lifetime like this? How can they pull it off? Men have layers and layers and layers of armor on, you know? Mm-hmm. Layers of armor, layers and layers of armor. Woman's like, here I am, I'm wide open. All the shutters are open. Here I am. I couldn't believe how vulnerable it was. So that was a profound experience for me where I felt myself as a woman, and never since then I could directly grok the female point of view to a profound degree because I experienced myself that way. And as a result of that, I end up doing this workshop called Goddess Council, which is designed to help enhance women blossoming further into their own goddesshood. And it has a profound effect on women. And typically when I do this workshop, for the first 15, 20 minutes, women are skeptical. Yeah, he's a guy, what does he know? He's just a guy. But after the first 15, 20 minutes, they get, oh, he's one of us, he's one of the girls. And then they have a great time, then they open up, then they get really excited. All of us girls have a great time for the rest of the workshop, and they really open up. Last time I did it was in Belgium. It was such a profound workshop. Some of the women opened up so deep, they were crying, they had such a great time. It was profound for all of them. And basically, I've learned many things to help them, make them conscious of a lot of common blocks women put up that hinder them blossoming into their own goddesshood. And I've become aware of many of these blocks. So I share, make them conscious of it. So each of them say, yeah, that block applies to me. No, it doesn't apply to me. And if it does apply to me, they have a choice to remove it now that they're conscious of it. You see? So I've been doing that with profound results I was at a Power Places Tour conference in Delphi, Greece for Goddess. It was a Goddess conference, and I was the only presenter that was male. All the other presenters were female. And the same thing happened. Initially, they're all skeptical. Yeah, he's a guy. You know, yeah. He's just a guy. What does he know? But they really got it. So, oh, he's one of us. He's one of the girls. And they had such a great time. It's fantastic. So I can talk a lot about what it means to be a goddess. But the best thing would be for you to get this DVD, which I'll send both of you. So you can see it.
What are some common blockages that like keep women from really getting in touch with their inner goddesses?
One of them is, if I'm really beautiful, men will always be coming on to me, and that's such a nuisance, such a hassle, that I don't want to deal with it. So I will minimize how beautiful and attractive I am, so I don't have to deal with the hassle of men coming on to me all the time. Now, I make them aware of that, and then I present them with another option, which is go ahead and be all the beauty you really are. Let it radiate. But instead of blocking that, instead, learn how to deal with men coming out to you in a very simple, easy, direct way where it's no longer a hassle. And what that way is, if they're coming out to you and you know you're not interested in them, get in touch with your own power and politely, lovingly communicate, sorry, I'm not interested in you. Now, most women do that from not being in their place of power. So the guy keeps chasing after them anyway, which creates a hassle. But if they're really in their power and they look them right in the eye and say, I'm sorry, but I'm not interested in you. Then the guy drop cold, he knows he's wasting his time there. Total waste of time, nothing's gonna happen here. And so it's not a hassle. So rather than hiding your inner beauty, let it shine. If you're dealing with guys coming out to you that you're totally not interested in at all, it doesn't need to be a hassle. Just lovingly communicate, I'm sorry, you're not my type, I'm sorry, I'm not interested. And if you're really doing it from a really being your power, they get it. They get it instantly.
They're not used to that. Probably not used to that.
Most women aren't in their power like that.
Yeah.
And if you're not in your power, you give a, no, like that. But if you're in your power, you can say, no thanks. It's really easy. It doesn't have to be harsh, it doesn't have to be nasty. You can say, no thanks. You can do it really, really lovingly. I mean, I could pull out my files from Goddess Council, all the things to talk about. I could talk about so many issues. I could spend the next hour just talking about all the different things going on in there. I don't know how much you want to get into that field, but I have my files there. I could look it up, but it's all kinds of things about like that. Another one is, in our culture, women are programmed to get their self-image from their man rather than from themselves. Who I am is whatever my man thinks and says I am rather than who they themselves decide they are. If your man says you're a beautiful goddess, then they feel wonderful about themselves. The man says you're a total bitch, then they feel sad because they feel I'm a total bitch. So they're not self-defining themselves, they're letting someone else define who they are rather than being self-defining. I say, of course it's important what your man thinks, but don't let him define who you are. Let only you define who you are. I've got so many different things on that topic. I'm bringing up my file on my laptop right now instead of giving you more and more and more. I don't know if you want to go down that rabbit hole, but that's a big rabbit hole with all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, totally. Is there like something like kind of like similar to the experience that you went through with getting in touch with your inner goddess and like learning so much about this other side for women to get in touch with their inner god? And like that male counterpart that's within themselves, so they're not always depending on this like outer male element.
The most important thing is for them to get in touch with their power, and their culture programmed to not be in touch with their power. Let's say, I'll give you an example. In our culture, if a man asks a woman, do you want to go to that restaurant? Or do you want to have sex tonight? Women are programmed not to say how they actually feel, but to try and guess what the man wants them to say and they say what they think the man wants them to say instead of how they actually feel. I say, don't do that. Say how you actually feel. Don't say what you think and guess he wants you to say. Nice example of not being in your power. If he wants to say, let's go to the movie tonight, do you want to go to the movie tonight? Instead of you giving an honest answer, actually, no, I don't want to go to the movie tonight, don't think, well, he wants me to go to the movie tonight, he wants me to say yes. I'll say, okay, honey, let's go to the movie tonight. That's not being in your power.
Mm-hmm.
Being in your power is giving an honest answer. Seeing how you actually feel rather than what you believe, compute, and expect he wants you to hear, he wants you to say. That's another example. The most important thing is just getting in touch with the power. The female version of power is much softer than male energy, but it's still being totally in your power. I know just a few women that are really in their power, and they can say, no, thank you. And they can say it very sweetly, but you know there's nothing you can do to budge them.
Yeah.
Now, another thing along this line is, humans graduate to being ascended masters. Human females graduate to being ascended lady masters, like Kuan Yin or Mother Mary or Lady Master Nada, and there are others. And they graduate eventually being sun goddesses, and then they graduate even to higher levels. Well, the interesting thing that happens is the higher they go, the more power they have. But the more power they have, the softer and more delicate they get.
Huh.
How could that be?
Yeah,
they can get to be so soft and delicate, like the most delicate petals on a flower, where like you could just touch them and they would, it looks like it would fall off, they get more delicate. How is that? For this reason, they can afford to be soft and delicate because they are so powerful that their power is never challenged.
Wow.
So they can afford to be powerful because they're not afraid, because their power is never challenged. So Kuan Yin would hope to have the level of vulnerability, openness, and delicateness of the sun goddess, Vesta, who hopes she would have the delicateness of the galactic goddess Omega. Goes like that, higher and higher and higher. They can be totally delicate and vulnerable because they're in their power, so they can afford to be, because they're not afraid of being pushed around.
Wow.
So the women, the higher they get, the softer they get. The more evolved they get, the softer they get, and also more in their power. See, the male version of power is you're tough. It doesn't have to be like that. You can be powerful, but delicate like a flower, all simultaneously.
That's so deep. Yeah, I mean, because it's like, if you're in that position, you're fearless, and fear is very, like, hardening.
Uh-huh. You know, so of course, you can go to the higher levels, you're fearless anyway, you know.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Well, if you can get Brian to organize a goddess council for women only here, I'll do it.
Let me tell you what. How long are you here for?
Oh, there's no time for this particular thing, but I mean, yeah, if there's another visit, yeah.
That'd be great.
I'll do it, because if you can get enough women interested in them blossoming more into their own goddesshood just by making them conscious of a lot of blocks, they have to remove them, and it'll be different blocks for different women, but a lot of them. But the highlight of the whole Goddess Council is when we do that essence honoring ceremony, which I talked about
sounds
before.
Cool.
Because that one, women really get high. They get almost dizzy being in that illumination flame, you know. And some of them, they get a praise overdose like they've never had in their whole life. Some of them start crying by being praised that much because their soul has been hungering for that their whole lifetime and they never had it. Suddenly all these other women, instead of female competition, instead of that, they're supporting them, they're praising them, and they start crying from getting so much support from loving sisters, from being seen for who they really are, because each woman has her own unique gifts, and these other women are seeing the unique gifts of the woman in the center of the circle, and they're telling her that, and she feels so seen and honored and appreciated. A lot of them start crying just from the gladness of it. A lot of them can't even take it anymore. That's as much as I can take to get out of the circle, you know.
Wow. That sounds so powerful. Have you made music like via like goddess assistance?
I have a piece of music I did called the Royal, which is called Goddess. It's called Helios and Vesta, which is a musical rendition of the Sun God and Sun Goddess.
Mm.
Second portion of that is the Goddess part, Vesta, and that was so popular that I made a half-hour version just of that part. It's called the Royal Court of Goddess Vesta, and that's a half an hour of just this gorgeous goddess energy. And that's one of the pieces I play a lot during the Goddess Council.
Wow, that sounds amazing. I want to hear it.
How could you hear it? Actually, you could go online and hear it. If you go to, write down this URL, iasos.com/audioclp.
Audioclp?
Yeah, a clip, but without the I.
Oh.
CLP. No, CL.
Yeah. Sorry, my LP. Are kind of weird.
Okay. And if you go there, you can listen to any of my albums. The album you want to listen to is called Jewel Space.
Jewel Space, it's beautiful.
And that has two pieces on it. And the second one is The Royal Court of Goddess Vesta. That's the one you want to hear. The Royal Court of Goddess Vesta. That'll give you a sense of it.
Yeah, that sounds really beautiful. I had just one more question.
Yeah.
I mean, I probably have lots more questions, but I don't want to take up too much of your time.
I don't care. I'm having fun.
Okay, good.
Don't worry about the time. Too. Yeah, just go for it. Have fun.
I don't know how to phrase this question, but I was thinking about it a lot.
You ask good questions, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I can tell you put a lot of thought into it.
Well, I think about this stuff a lot. Too. So it's really nice to hear coming from you.
Okay.
Yeah. With light body activation, I think about if you put so much emphasis on like activating the light body, I wonder if that casts a greater shadow. And what about the shadow body? What happens with that? Is there a shadow body? And is there a process of shadow body activation as well?
I know a lot of people talk a lot about getting in touch with your dark self and your shadow body and all that. Personally, I'm not into it at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Right.
For the simple reason, if there's darkness, you can shine a flashlight on it and darkness is gone. So you don't need to focus on the darkness, you just add light.
Hmm.
There's a light switch, there's no such thing as a darkness switch, it's just a lack of light.
Hmm.
You add light and the darkness is gone, so why focus on the darkness?
Well, I guess... I mean, I can see the argument for both sides. I'm not personally into focusing on darkness either, just like for the sake of focusing on darkness.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that maybe there is some, like, truth to just looking at, like, where there is light, there is darkness, and, like, there's, like, this balance, and, like, how they can be seen in harmony together, and, like, the dark side doesn't have to be this sort of, like,
well, you
thing.
Just said where there's light, there's darkness. I'd say the opposite. Where there's light, there isn't darkness. And where there isn't light, there is darkness.
Hmm.
Darkness is the absence of light.
What about shadow?
That's, you could say that shadow is where there's no light. And where there is light, there's no shadow. The shadow self, the dark self, the hidden dark parts. The ones that want to creep out and be a monster. I don't, you know, I'm not really much into that.
Has that ever happened to you? Like, I mean, in your process of, I mean, because you've gone through such a process of...
Has what happened to you?
I feel like anyone going down, like, a process of trying to enlighten themselves, so to speak. It's like you get confronted with these different past...
I've had memories of other lifetimes of me.
Uh-huh.
But not this lifetime. Recently I had a memory of another lifetime of me where I was in a very evil war leader doing a whole bunch of horrible things like killing captives that I captured in battle for no good reason at all.
Wow.
Really horrible things. And I'm not like that now, I'm very loving now, but that was me then. And as I remember, furthermore, I was holding guilt from that as I incarnated into this lifetime. So part of me, this lifetime, is feeling I don't deserve anything because I was feeling guilty about what I did in that lifetime.
Mm.
So shadow self in the sense of bad things I did in other lifetimes, not now.
Mm-hmm.
This lifetime I wouldn't even hurt an insect. You know, I tried to be loving and caring to everything. The only thing I hurt is mosquitoes because they attack me. You know, except for that, I don't hurt anything.
Mm-hmm.
So... For me, shadow self only applies to bad things I've been or done other lifetimes, not this lifetime.
What about for other people?
What about other people?
Well, you know, other people who are, like, trying to go through a process of like self-realization and then like realizing these sort of darker aspects of themselves and having to deal with them and confront these issues.
The best way to deal with it is just get in touch with your own love.
Mm.
Get in touch. You don't need to focus on all the junk. Just focus on the love.
Mm.
Whatever you focus on, it gets magnified.
Okay.
So the way the universe works, you focus on what you want. You don't focus on what you don't want. You don't say, I don't want to be poor. You say, I want to be rich. You don't say, I don't want to be sick. You say, I want to be healthy.
Hmm.
If you say, because the universe focuses on whatever you're focusing your attention on, regardless whether you say, I want or I don't want.
Okay.
So, you don't focus on, I want to get rid of my darkness. You focus on being a loving being.
Hmm.
Focus on what you want. Don't focus on what you don't want.
What if you did want that darkness?
Well, then great. Go for it and have a great time.
Is there a way to focus on that in a creative way?
Well, if you come up with it, let me know.
I don't know. I'm asking you.
That's an avenue I wouldn't even want to go down.
Yeah.
I don't even want to waste energy thinking about it because that's something I'm interested in.
Uh-huh. But I mean, like, I guess with darkness, I'm not just talking about, like, malevolent darkness, but also just, like, you know, how the reason why there is harmonics is because there is dissonance. And, like, we can
recognize... I don't agree with that.
You don't?
No.
Okay, why?
The reason there's harmonics is because there's dissonance.
Well, just that we hear.
There are many realms
that are
very heavenly, but there's no dissonance at all. It's only harmony.
Right, but we wouldn't even perceive harmony if we didn't hear something otherwise. To be like, oh, well, that's definitely not harmony.
Okay, well, there's contrast here, of course, but you can have contrast where there's disharmony and harmony, or you can have contrast where there's harmony and even more extreme harmony and even more extreme harmony.
Mm.
You can still have contrast that way, but none of it is dissonant. It's all harmonious. Mm.
Okay, well, use the word contrast. That's kind of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you can have contrast, but it doesn't have to be dissonance in it.
Okay.
On Earth, there's a lot of dissonance.
Yeah.
But you don't have to have dissonance. There's a lot of realms that have a lot of contrast with no dissonance at all, just harmony.
Hmm. But don't you feel like there needs to be a balance somehow?
Ah, now that's your belief. If your belief is, for every pound of pleasure I have, I'm going to have a pound of pain. For every amount of sweetness and love, there's also going to be a lot of darkness and hate and cruelty and pain happening. If that's your belief, that's what you're going to get. It doesn't have to be that way.
Hmm.
You can say, the higher you get, the more you become aware of both the good stuff and the bad stuff.
Hmm.
But you don't need to directly, personally experience the bad stuff.
Okay.
If you got yourself programmed and oriented in a very positive way, as you increase in consciousness, you become more aware of all the heavenly things going on and all the demonic horrible stuff going on, but you personally don't need to experience the negative stuff. If you believe, I need to experience 50% positive, 50% negative, if you believe that, that's what you'll end up experiencing, but you don't need to. You can believe, I only experience nice things. So you may hear about other people being mugged down the street, or other people being murdered in their bedroom, or other people being robbed, but you yourself will not experience it. So you can become aware of both negative and positive, but you yourself do not necessarily have to experience it. However, if your belief is, well, it's got to be both positive and negative, then you'll end up experiencing good things and bad things. You don't have to buy into that belief.
Hmm. Then how do you have empathy if you don't experience anything negative?
By caring for people. I haven't ever been mugged, but I still have compassion for people that have been mugged. I've never been raped, but I still have compassion for women that have been raped. I care, and I want to do everything I can to help them. So you don't need to experience it yourself in order to have compassion for it.
Hmm. Yeah, it's something that's just, it's so, I think about it so much, especially like in terms of like physics. They talk about like how this world is constructed of, you know, like 95.4% dark matter. They use this word dark a lot.
Yes, I know.
You know, for like what's
because mysterious. They don't really understand it, so they call it dark matter.
Right, right. So it's just like this sort of like unknown or unknowing.
Yeah.
And
our physics is in a state of kindergarten.
once the
benevolent ET races can interact with the public much more openly, then our physics take a huge jump. Now the secret government already has a huge jump. They're about 1,000 years ahead of public science, what the secret government knows, because of advanced physics they've gotten from alien races. They're thousands of years ahead. They can do things probably could not even dream of. They can teleport. They have anti-gravity. You wouldn't believe the stuff they got. They have equipment that you can communicate with telepathically. So, once we can publicly interact with alien benevolent races, then our physics will take a huge quantum leap. Right now, what we know isn't beans, it's nothing.
Yeah.
We're stabbing in the dark. We're
just
children. We're pre-kindergarten.
Yeah, like literally stabbing in the dark.
There are a lot of alien races. There are a lot of alien races that have had faster than light travel, and they've been bouncing out of the universe for millions of years. And we're just getting out of the womb. So we're just, you know, a little kid on the block. We're just starting.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. But I think that what you're saying with, like, the next couple years, people opening up more.
Oh, yeah. It would be
really important.
Do you realize that right now our solar system is passing through the galactic plane? Do you understand that?
No.
Okay. You know a galaxy you can think of as a pancake, right?
Really?
The shape of a galaxy.
Okay.
Being basically flat, right?
All
right. With a center nucleus, all these arms going out, but it's basically all on a flat plane.
Okay.
Well, our solar system is orbiting around the center of the galaxy, but it's not really in this flat plane of the galaxy. Half of our orbit, we're above it. Half of the orbit, we're below it. It's slightly off angle. You see, it's like this. Half of it, it's above the galactic plane. Half of it is below the galactic plane, meaning the flat area where most of the stars are. Right? So, twice each revolution, we pass through the galactic plane. And when that happens, we get a lot more juice, consciousness, and energy from the galactic core. And that's what's happening right now.
Oh, wow.
And we're in the dead center of it, December 21, 2012.
But if time's accelerating, then what does that date even mean?
It means you'll subjectively experience it sooner than it had happened, you know, 30 years earlier.
Uh-huh.
But it's still going to happen December 21, wherever that is. But the day's time, the sense of time speeding up. But that's when our solar system is passing through the thickest part of the galactic plane. And so when that happens, it's charging up our sun. We're having a lot more solar flares. Why? Because the sun's getting charged up, a lot more activity from the solar, from the galactic center. It's getting charged up. It's charging up all the planets in our solar system. There's global warming happening on all the planets, not just Earth.
Huh.
All the planets are experiencing that because the sun's getting more charged up. It's getting activated.
Wow.
So we're all getting activated.
That makes sense with time speeding up too, because like heat makes things go
yes,
faster.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so the molecules in steam are vibrating faster than molecules in water.
Yeah. But it's interesting what you said last night about how like music getting faster, like if it did, we wouldn't notice because we're vibrating faster too. So all of us, it's like, if it's all vibrating faster and we're all like accelerating, would we even notice this shift happening? Because it's like we're already, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh,
kind of living
Everyone notices it in their own unique way.
That's fair enough. Thanks for talking with me.
You mean you're finished?
I guess so.
Camilla, do you have any questions?
Better,
let me rephrase that. Camilla, what are your questions?
You want to do it now? Is it okay if I ask you later? It's been a lot. I'll ask you some later.
You would prefer later?
Short ones, is that
okay? Any way you want it is okay. Do you really prefer it later than now?
Yeah.
Okay, fine, we'll do it later.
I have to catch a plane, unfortunately.
Shall I stop the recording?
Yeah.